Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Women's Soccer Zone. My name is Kieran Tatham. And of course, as always, I'm joined by my deputy editor on the other side of the pond, JJ Duke. JJ, how are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm good. Good to be back. It's been a little bit of a while, hasn't it?
It's the normal 2 weeks. It's the normal 2 weeks. But I think it's one of those where so much has happened in the world of women's soccer in the last couple of weeks. It almost feels longer. But for that reason, there has been so much. We need to crack on, and we're recording this episode within an hour of the BBC Women's Footballer of the Year having been announced. It was confirmed today that Leon and Norway striker Ad Hegerberg is the recipient of the BBC Women's Footballer of the Year. Congratulations to her. I must confess, she did get my vote from the five nominees. It was, of course, Ad Hegerberg alongside Germany's Melanie Behringer, Brazil's Marta, Christine Sinclair of Canada, and Swedish goalkeeper Hedvig Lindahl. And it is Hegerberg who comes out on top. JJ, 21 years old, and she won a treble last year. She's on course for a treble this year. She was top scorer in the UEFA Women's Champions League last year. It's very difficult to argue with the public on this one.
No, and I think, you know, when you look at it, there's not many cases to go against any of those five players, for that matter, in this competition. So that just shows the class that Ada brought from this past year alone. Now, you know, for some may say, well, Norway, that we're still waiting for kind of this big result to come from this new age team. But you know what? You and I have been very high on them leading into the Euros this year. And I think, you know, not that players always really want to talk about awards because it's always the team first, then yourself. But, you know, I think just this little extra confidence will boost her on to a pretty successful next couple of months.
Yeah, with Ada, obviously, she's got the UEFA Women's Champions League final coming up this week. We'll have a chat about that shortly. But you are absolutely right. I think she acknowledged in receiving the award, it was actually really nice. Sarah Mulcair-Ince, who is a BBC World Service journalist, was there in Lyon to interview Ada. Sarah's someone that I know very well and really good journalist covering women's football and does a really good job covering the game. And she was there and she interviewed Ada and said, you know, we've got a surprise for you as to who's going to be presenting the award. And out stepped her sister, Andrina Hegerberg, who obviously plays her football for Birmingham City. So it was a really nice moment. But one of the things that she did do when she was being interviewed is obviously acknowledge the fact that she plays in an incredible team. We know how rich that Lyon team is with talent. And when you are a striker and when you are a player of her ability, you are going to be scoring a lot of goals and you are going to be winning a lot of trophies.
Yeah, agreed. And I mean, you know, half of the time the striker is always going to, you know, be thankful the players that are around her. And I shouldn't even say half the time, it's almost every time, because, you know, so often you see strikers, they're being set up from great service out wide, someone hitting that killer ball through, you know, the midfield third or, you know, one or another. But then, you know, Ada is a player that can really do it all. She's technically sound with her feet, great awareness on the field. And, you know, when the option for her isn't available, as you said, there are plenty of players around her that can finish the job off. But yeah, I think this is something, you know, this is something that she deserves. I mean, we always talk about other big players, and rightfully so, because every player has their moment, has their year, or in the case for Marta, has a run of five straight years winning the FIFA World Player of the Year award. So yeah, you know, I think this is the one that Ada really deserves.
I think what's nice about this one is she was the only player out of the five who didn't play in the Rio Olympics last year. And so often you mentioned there Marta winning the FIFA Ballon d'Or or the FIFA Women's World Player of the Year on five occasions. And we've seen players who traditionally would normally win it off the back of a tournament. We saw last year Carly Lloyd and Jill Ellis win the respective awards after the 2015 World Cup. I don't think anyone argues with those two winning it, but I think there have been occasions in the past where maybe a major tournament has skewed people's perceptions of what's going on in the women's game. We know that domestically there are some tremendous players who put on performances week in, week out for their club. But unless they are playing in a major tournament like a World Cup or an Olympic Games or a European Championships, they're never going to get an opportunity to win that big award. And what this reiterates, the BBC award, is that if you're doing well for your club, if you're scoring goals or if you're keeping clean sheets or whatever it might be, you are going to be recognised and you could be in with a chance of winning that award.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, hopefully with you know, the continuation of the growth of the club game throughout the world, and we have more teams, and we've mentioned this in past shows, about more teams putting more funding, more resources into their women's side, and, you know, having bigger and better competition. I mean, you couldn't ask for much better knockout stage, or the latter portion of the knockout stages in the Champions League. And hopefully, as you said, more and more players will start to get recognized down the road for their week in, week out achievements, as opposed to their one shining light moment in a big competition.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we named the five nominees. There was a top three. Marta came second, and good to see Christine Sinclair recognised. I know she hasn't won the award, but to come third, when we spoke to Kaylee and Kyle, obviously, a couple of months ago, she said, you know, Christine is one of those players that she thinks is one of the best players in the world, but never seems to get recognised when these lists come out. And for Christine to come third for the BBC award, I think is testament to the year that she had last year. Was phenomenal for Canada in the Rio Olympics, continues to play well week in, week out for the Portland Thorns. And, you know, Marta, we know what she did last year, had the weight of a nation on her shoulders at the Rio 2016 Olympics, and, you know, took her team to within, you know, not very far of winning a medal. So I haven't really got much argument with those top three. I think of the five that were nominated, Melanie Behringer, obviously very unlucky, won the league with Bayern Munich, won gold medal at the Olympics. You know, on another year, she probably wins the award, but it's so fiercely competitive now. There's so many world-class players all over the world. It's difficult. It's very, very difficult. Think of the players that didn't even make that top five. So congratulations to Ada Hegerberg and all those other four players that were nominated. Seeing as we're speaking about Ada, mate, we should probably move on to the UEFA Women's Champions League. Obviously, the final takes place this week in Cardiff. It will be Ada's Olympique Lyonnais taking on their French rivals, Paris Saint-Germain. First time that we'll see an all-French final in a European women's final. It's going to be an interesting one. We saw them face off in the French Cup final, the Coupe de France, a couple of weeks ago. Lyon came out winners on penalties. How do we see this one going? Expecting another close one?
Yeah, another close one. I mean, look, you've said three times that they've squared off this year. You can almost really go it as there's not much to decipher between the two teams. Everybody's gotten a piece of the glory so far, and now as we go into the fourth one, it's really going to be the team that holds their head in the latest. And I know that's kind of cliche-ish, but in this circumstance, I think because Lyon, they've been there, they've done it. They know what it takes at this stage to get the job done. One would have to think that they're going to be the team that could come away with the title yet again. But then again, you know, you've seen these two teams play in person, or have a lot better of access to watch these matches on television as opposed to what I have. But in my take, it's going to be close. I wouldn't be surprised if we see more than 90 minutes in this match, but I think that there's a good chance Lyon takes the title.
It's so difficult to call because I think a lot of it depends on which team turns up. And I know that sounds like an obvious statement, but we've seen this year PSG beat Lyon at home in the league and they completely stifled Lyon's attack. They barely got a chance and PSG were incredibly disciplined. They were well organised and they got a really good win. And then I look at the Coupe de France final. There was very little between them in that game as well. But Lyon at home, comfortable winners over PSG. I remember when they faced each other in the Women's Champions League last year. I think it was at the semi-final stage. I implore people to have a look on YouTube. If you type in Lyon 7, PSG 0, you will see one of the most comprehensive displays you will see in the women's game. We were talking the latter stages of a European competition. Two major rivals, and Lyon absolutely ripped PSG apart. Now, they can do that to any team on any day, but if PSG show up, if PSG are disciplined, they are the one team who I've seen over the last few years. I went to Lyon beginning of 2014, and Lyon were on a long unbeaten home run, and Laura Georges scored a header for PSG in the Stade Gerland, which is where Lyon used to play. And PSG got a 1-0 win. They are the one team that I've seen, more often than not, that can stifle Lyon. And I'm just wondering, if PSG can show up and everyone is on form, maybe, like you say, it could be another one that goes beyond 90 minutes.
Well, I think you kind of can take out some of the odd elements. You know, when you have a team like Manchester City, just to take example, you know, you can only really kind of see and scout what you have on video. Maybe you have a coach or a scout go out there to watch the matches, but you have PSG who have played Lyon three times. Wait, that's a 270 minutes of actually playing against really the best team in the world in one season. That is huge in terms of you know what it takes. You've seen the players how on the opposite side of how they link together and who can exploit whose weaknesses. And that's the real only advantage that a team like PSG can have against anybody else in Champions League competition. They play them, not on a week-in, week-out basis, that's impossible, but they at least play them more than once or twice in a season, so they can, you know, go back to old reports, they can see what worked, what didn't work. Obviously, that 7-0 thrashing, they probably had a lot of notes in the, we need to fix this category, as opposed to the ones that we were successful at. So I think that helps. I think that's the real benefit for them to have a chance in this. You did this one leg.
Yeah, of course, of course. And let's not just focus on Lyon. PSG have some real talent in their side. Christian has had a great season for PSG this year. Shirley Cruz, the Costa Rican, the captain of the PSG side, has again shown up this year. There's going to be an extra incentive for PSG to try and win this game. Sabrine Delanoir has announced that she's going to be retiring, the former French international. She'll be playing her last game for the Women's Champions League finalists. So PSG are not going to go into this one and roll over. And I still think Lyon are favourites. I still think that they are going to be the team that retain their title. But it will be, I think it will be close. I don't think this is going to be a one-sided affair. But I guess one of the things that has been a talking point in the week leading up to it is Alex Morgan. There's no getting away from that. We saw Alex limp off in a league game a couple of weeks ago. Jean-Michel Aulas, the president of Lyon, said that it was unlikely that she would play in the Champions League final. She was completely ruled out of the French Cup final. She played no part of that whatsoever. But looking at Lyon's social media channels, looking at the articles that are going up in French media, it looks like Alex has travelled with the team as part of an 18-player squad for the final in Cardiff. If that is the case, she could potentially be the wild card. I don't see her starting. I think they would be foolish not to go with Hegerberg and Le Sommer based on the relationship those two have and based on the fact that they're both fighting fit. But maybe if they need a goal, Alex Morgan could be that player that comes off the bench.
I think that you really took the words out of my mouth. If Lyon needs an extra element, they will go to her. I mean, it's always a tough ask to have any player that's less than 100% go in a major final. Now, granted, this is the culmination of a long season. Nobody's at 100%. But Alex, at least what the reports were originally saying, you know, if there was any doubt of a couple of weeks ago, I don't think that the odds of her being 90 minutes fit would be much better. 20 minutes, yeah, it's a possibility. I mean, that's even almost waiting to see, well, if that match goes into extra time and you need someone that could not only make an impact in that extra time period but could step up and take a penalty, you can go to her. But yeah, you're right, the wild card, the one that could change this game, or it could just be a decoy, you know? I mean, again, it's cliche-ish, but Lyon could be just bringing her along to show but nothing more and hope that what they have, which granted they have a lot, will be good enough to get a result.
Yeah, I think we've said it on previous shows, I don't think Lyon need Alex Morgan to win this game, but I think if they are struggling and they need someone who can come on and change a game, then we know the ability and the class that she's got, and it could be that she is that game changer. PSG have their own quality. We've mentioned the likes of Christiane and Shirley Cruz. Marie Laudalie is always a threat. She's good in the air. Her movement is excellent, and she will be a threat for PSG as well. They have, you know, players like Vera Baquet, who hasn't actually played as much as I would have expected her to. I think she's, you know, she's part of a very, very strong squad there, and it's not necessarily going to be a banker that she's going to start. Formiga in midfield, we know what experience she brings. There's a lot of quality in that PSG side. I'm really looking forward to it, mate. I can't wait to get out to Cardiff and watch that game, and I'm hoping that you guys in the States can watch it as well. I'm hoping that a broadcaster is picking it up. If not, I'm sure there will be some streams that will be floating around online that we shall not mention because not many of them tend to be legal. But should be a cracking game, and I think we'll definitely discuss that one on the next show. I'll certainly try and pick up some audio after the game. But we'll have a very short break, mate, and then when we come back, we will have a chat about some of the things that are going on in some of the other European leagues.
Women's Soccer Zone. Follow the show on Twitter at WOSOZone.
So, welcome back. JJ, we're not going to talk about the FAWSL Spring Series results that have been going on because we're going to do a review of the Spring Series in our next show because we are now in the final week of the mini-series. But there have been some talking points in the WSL. I guess the biggest news story that came out of the league in the last couple of weeks was the signing of Vivian Miedema for Arsenal Ladies. Now, we saw that Vivian had been released by Bayern Munich, or she'd not signed a new contract, so we knew that she would be moving on to pastures new. There were rumours that potentially Manchester City might be interested. I'm sure there were plenty of clubs interested in the United States if there were any international roster spots available as well. But it's Arsenal Ladies who've got their player. She will join the club in September for the FAWSL season proper. Not a bad signing for Arsenal Ladies, is it?
Yeah, now kind of completing this small Dutch group that Arsenal has. But, you know, that's the thing that was probably the winning point for Arsenal signing Miedema, is because you have some familiarity. You have a fair few players from her homeland that are already playing for that team, so no doubt they'll have probably passed along a few good notes, and that could only help Pedro Losa's case in signing her. So, yeah, I mean, you look at it, you and I have been back and forth about Arsenal's performance in the spring season. Again, it's an exhibition friendly season, really, if you will, but there have been some days that they've shown up, some days that they have not. And goal scoring, well, if you can find a goal scorer in form, then you go after and you try to bring that goal scorer in. And, you know, they got a winner right there. That's going to be a good signing to help that team, because she's athletic, she's talented, and maybe isn't she, she's only like, what, 21? 22, if that. I mean, that's amazing.
She is early 20s, very young, lots of goals for Bayern Munich, a focal point for the Dutch national team. She will be one of the players that everyone will be looking out for at the Euros this summer. Just going to reel off some names for you, mate. Chloe Kelly, Beth Mead, Jodie Taylor, Danielle Carter, Heather O'Reilly, Danielle van der Donk, Kim Little, all attacking players at Arsenal Ladies, and I may have even forgotten one or two. Where on earth do they all fit in to that team for Pedro Losa come September? They can't surely all be there come September. And then the question is, who are they going to get rid of? Now, I'm not asking you that question. It's more a rhetorical question, because I'm sure it's something for people to think about. But that is another attacking player into a list that is already incredibly strong.
So what you're saying is that Arsenal Ladies becomes the Chelsea Men of having 50 loaned players all across Europe. Is that what I'm gathering here?
I genuinely don't know. I mean, they loaned Chloe Kelly out to Everton Ladies for a period last year, and she did really well there, and I think that hugely benefited her. Carla Humphreys, another attacking player that I haven't even mentioned. So there are some that I've missed out, and I think there may well be some players going out on loan. I think there may even be one or two that possibly leave. I will quite happily mention that a national journalist who is not commonly known for covering the women's game has actually written a piece this evening in England linking Danielle Carter with Manchester City Women. Now, I watched Man City Women against Arsenal Ladies this week. As I said, we're not going to talk about individual results, but Arsenal Ladies went to Manchester and won 1-0. If there's been probably a slight weakness in the City team, it probably has been that focal striker, that number nine. Jane Ross did a phenomenal job last year, hasn't really played very much this season. Carly Lloyd's played as a false nine. Obviously, she's had her suspension, which we'll talk about in a minute. Dan Carter could potentially fill that void at Manchester City. It would solve the issue that Arsenal have with having too many forwards. But every time I speak to Pedro Losa, he looks at players like Jordan Nobbs, like Leah Williamson, like Dan Carter, and they are the names that he always mentions as building the team around. So I just don't see Dan Carter going, but I don't see how you keep all those players.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. I mean, they kind of say it as an adage here in American sports, you never sell one of your top players to your rivals. I would be shocked if Arsenal sold a player like Dan Carter to Manchester City, because that's pretty much saying, well, here's one of our best assets, but, oh, you guys need a hole, fill a hole, so go ahead. No, that doesn't work. I would see loans happening. I could probably be seeing sales of players to other countries, perhaps. I wouldn't be surprised if there was a look for an American team come next year for one of those players in that group, but that's beside the point. But yeah, now there's going to be a lot of figuring out the puzzle for Pedro Losa come this summer. There's not going to be a whole lot of vacation time, is there, for him?
No, there isn't. He's got a lot to think about, without a doubt. I know, look, when Vivian Miedema becomes available, it's a player that is very difficult to turn down, and she will add quality, no doubt about that. And with players like Heather O'Reilly on the flanks, she's going to get a lot of service as well. I want to stay with Arsenal very briefly before we move on. Devastating news came out of the club while Vivian Miedema was a highlight. It was announced that Kim Little has ruptured her ACL. Looks like she's going to be out a while, mate. They haven't put a time frame on it. I did contact the Scottish FA and ask if they had any comment to make on the injury. They said they were still assessing it and they had no comment to make. But I would be amazed if we see Kim Little at Euro 2017 based on the fact she's ruptured her ACL. And if she is out, I don't think there's many players. No one wishes injury on any player. But I think everyone saw Kim. This was the opportunity for her to show what she could do on the biggest stage. We saw her at the Olympics in 2012 as part of Team GB. I think it's widely accepted that Team GB underperformed at that Olympics. This was Kim's real opportunity to show the world what she's about, and it doesn't look like she's going to be there.
Yeah, that's 100% correct. I mean, you hate talking about stuff like this, and you're right. This was really her one moment, which is kind of disappointing, but then again, there's been plenty of good players out there that haven't had opportunities to perform at major internationals. I mean, what we only have seen, for example, what Vera Bouquet has only played in a handful of major tournaments, and that's not to say past the main portion years of her career. But you know, if you gave Spain an opportunity back in like 2011. Boy, that would have been a fun team to watch with her, like, right in the middle of her prime be there. And that's just one example. There's plenty of players out there that haven't gotten a look because, you know, their country of birth might not be the strongest in the world and might not be a team that can qualify. Now they're there. Scotland, not to say that they rely heavily on her, but you're right, there aren't too many other players like a Kim Little. And this is going to be devastating both for Arsenal, but more so this summer for Scotland.
Yeah, without a doubt. We, of course, wish Kim all the best in her recovery. As I say, I haven't got any idea what the time frame is on her recovery, but as I said, I'd be very surprised if we see her at the Euros. She hasn't been officially ruled out, but I just don't see how you come back from a ruptured ACL in 2 months or whatever it is until the tournament starts. Yeah, it's less than 2 months. So, yeah, wish her well in her recovery. Before we move on from WSL, mate, difficult one to kind of have a conversation with, because there hasn't been a lot of talk in terms of the aftermath from Carly herself, but was sent off for an elbow last week against the Yeovil Ladies. She'd been on the field for just over 10 minutes. She came on as a second-half substitute. Manchester City were coasting. They were well up on the Yeovil. They won the game 5-1, and Carly managed to get herself sent off for an elbow on Annie Heatherson. Now, it meant that she's suspended for 3 games. She's served 2 of the game suspension already. The third one is this week, and she'll play the last game of the season against Liverpool. It's disappointing, isn't it? Because City brought her in as their kind of focal point, as their star player, the FIFA Women's World Player of the Year, and to get sent off and get a ban for 3 games, which is essentially a third of the spring series, it's kind of difficult to know what was going through her mind when that happened, because when you look at it back, there's no real kind of excuse for it, is there? It is a red card, and she's having to serve a 3-game ban for it.
Yeah, referee was well positioned right there on the spot to make that call. And yeah, you're wondering exactly, like you said, what's going through her mind there, because the team's already up. It's really a meaningless corner. If anything, City could have just played quickly, just kept possession, knocked it around, as they were probably doing throughout the entirety of the match anyways. And then all of a sudden this happens, and what, she's had to miss a match or two already due to appearances or other obligations. So, yeah, not to say that this is a troubling moment, because it is. You brought in a player to be with the team for, well, you have the 8 or 9 matches in the league. You had the quarterfinal and semifinal appearances in Champions League, plus the FA Cup run. You're expecting her to be available for nearly all, and you know, getting sent off straight away, that's not a good one, not a good look. But yeah, again, that's part of the game, and you know, this will be one for her just to look back on, learn from, and move on.
Yeah, I mean, the games that she's missed have been spring series matches, so they haven't been as vital as an FA Cup final or a Women's Champions League semi-final like she has played in and scored, obviously. So yeah, disappointing. You know, you want to see her. She's come here with a big reputation, rightfully, because of the accolades that she's won, and obviously being the best player in the world, you want her available for every game that Man City are playing. So it's disappointing for the supporters, and obviously disappointing for people like myself who cover the NWSL and the FAWSL. You want to see the big players in the big games. So, you know, it's one of those things, isn't it? I feel for Annie Hefferson. You know, it's not nice to be on the receiving end of something like that. But she's served her ban, or she's serving her ban, and she'll have her last game this coming weekend. And obviously, as I say, we'll review the spring series next week. I think we'll do a special and just kind of have a look over it and maybe try and get some quotes from some players that have been involved. But we'll move on. European leagues, I mentioned. Before we move over to the NWSL, I want to have a very brief chat about Germany, and more specifically VfL Wolfsburg. Now, Wolfsburg were able to end Bayern Munich's dominance of the Frauen-Bundesliga. They, of course, won back-to-back titles last year and the year before. Wolfsburg came out on top, winning the title this year, and they added to that with winning the German Pokal, which is the German Cup. They beat SC Sand this past weekend 2-1, Pernilla Harder grabbing a double. Now, there were celebrations that were penciled in for the team to, I think, have a trophy kind of parade this past Sunday. Those celebrations were cancelled because the men's team for Wolfsburg were playing this past Monday in a relegation playoff. Now, I believe the way that it works is that one of the bottom clubs in the top division in Germany plays one of the top clubs in the second division in Germany for a place in next season's top division, the Bundesliga. Now, Wolfsburg came out on top in that, so they will be in the Bundesliga next year. But the fact that they cancelled the women's celebration, I believe that they said that it was in solidarity and to kind of focus on the men's team's survival, and that the women's team would get their celebration maybe later on in the year. Not sure I buy it, mate. If the boot was on the other foot, I'm not sure they'd be cancelling the men's trophy celebrations if it was the women facing relegation.
You're 100% right. I mean, let's be real right now. I mean, you just had a team that won a trophy. Not winning a trophy for just barely scraping by in the league and staying up for a season. Now, I know there's a little bit of a difference. You know, obviously, you look back in England in the second tier for the men, you had your championship playoff. That has a little bit of a different meaning because you've won to move up. You're not winning to stay up. Look, if I'm Wolfsburg right now, this isn't a big black eye, but it's definitely a bruise right there, because you have to celebrate success. And by doing that is to reward that team that had success by, you know, giving them all the applause and plaudits that they deserve, and by saying, oh, well, we're going to cancel this because we hope that our men's team doesn't disgrace. I mean, maybe that's a little bit too strong of a word, but doesn't fall down to a lower rank and automatically we have to, you know, lower our expectations and lower everything else. Look, if you have a team that won a trophy, they deserve to be recognized the proper way. And you're saying, I want to get this clear, the celebration was scheduled for a different day than the actual men's match. Is that correct?
Yeah, the trophy celebration was scheduled in for this past Sunday. The men were playing on Monday.
So what's the deal? What's the big deal?
Well, the deal is that obviously, like a number of clubs across Europe, and obviously you see it in the NWSL with the Houston Dash and the Houston Dynamo, the Portland Thorns, the Portland Timbers, and the Pride and Orlando City, they're very closely affiliated. And I guess the way that they looked at it is that we have this one club mentality. If the men are on the verge of being relegated, is it right for us to be celebrating the day before? Despite the fact it's a different team, despite the fact that it's the women who've won a double, we're not just talking about one trophy, we're talking about two. Is it right that we then have this celebration? One thing I didn't mention, mate, is that after the men confirmed their status in the Bundesliga, Wolfsburg then went and arranged for, I believe it's today, the day that we're recording, they are having a celebration barbecue to mark the men's survival. So the women have had their trophy celebration cancelled for being successful, and the men, who are essentially have the last game of the season or last two games of the season managed to retain their Bundesliga status, are being celebrated for what is essentially a poor season.
Yeah, and when I meant by what's the big deal, I meant what's by the big deal of Wolfsburg needed to cancel on a different day. I should probably clarify that before, but now that you've said that, yeah, I really don't know what to think about all this. I mean, this is... It's disappointing, you know? We're trying to see the women's game continue to evolve, continue to grow, continue to get popularity. And look, as we know, in Germany, both at the national team level and the club team level, the women's game is very strongly backed, very strongly supported. This is taking about like three steps back in seeing what transpires here.
Yeah, totally agree. I mean, I want to be a little bit balanced. Now, I'm with you. I don't think this is the right call. I think they've made a mistake. You're right. It's not a full-on punch in the face. It's a mistake. There's no doubt about that. They've made a bad call. One thing I did want to try and point out on social media, because there was a lot of criticism being aimed at Wolfsburg. Wolfsburg's men's team are one of the most supportive in terms of, or Wolfsburg as a club, are one of the most supportive of their women's program. We've seen how Wolfsburg came from, if we're being honest, virtually nowhere over the last few years into a team that's winning Champions League titles, that's winning Frauen Bundesliga titles, and that is a result of investment, that is a result of bringing in top-class internationals and making that team competitive. Now, we have seen in years gone by where a men's team, has suffered a relegation, or they've suffered some form of loss of form, that has resulted in the team having to make financial cuts. And unfortunately, one of the first ports of call to make those cuts is the women's team. Now, if the Wolfsburg men's team had been relegated, there is a good chance that they would have had to make some cuts. It's almost certain. You cannot have Bundesliga wage bills. It's the same in the Premier League, the English Premier League. If you get relegated, you cannot operate in the English Championship with a Premier League wage bill. It's the same in Germany, I'm almost certain. Wolfsburg would not have been able to operate on a Bundesliga wage bill in the second division. So you're then having to look at ways that you can save money and look at ways that you can make cuts. And no doubt they will have sold players, they would have loaned players out. But I can't guarantee it. I would never want to make any bold statements, but it wouldn't have surprised me if they'd looked at the women's team as an opportunity to save a few dollars here and there. And you don't want that. So their top flight status was crucial. It was really important that they retain their top flight status, because now they will get the Bundesliga money, they will get the TV money, and that will hopefully see some more money ploughed into the women's team. So I get it. It was a poor decision. It was a bad decision. It was really, really wrong to cancel celebrations. But there is a very, very, very small part of me that understands why they did it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, unfortunately, I can't really, not to say relate to that, but we don't have that here, obviously, in America, where, you know, there's no in men's soccer promotion relegation. Now, that I, for those Americans that are listening and for those that are asking for pro rel, I feel your pain. I just, we can't relate to stories like that, because these are all single franchises that buy into a league. But I can, though, understand where finances do become an issue at times. And, you know, we've had plenty of our share of teams and leagues folding here in the U.S. due to the numbers game with the dollar bill on it. So I can understand that. But it's all disappointing to me.
Yeah, without a doubt. I know our German writer, Jasmina Schweimler, who obviously covers Wolfsburg for a local newspaper, wasn't happy about it either. And I know she's got some things to say on, say about it. Whether we'll maybe let her loose on the website at some stage, mate, if she can keep the language clean and clean and tidy. But look, we'll move on. I think we've discussed that enough. We'll have a break and then we'll come back and we'll have a chat about some stuff that's been going on in the NWSL.
Women's Soccer Zone would like to thank our partners, She Kicks Magazine. Subscribe at shekicks.net for even more women's football.
So JJ, one city in the NWSL has dominated conversation over the last few days, and that is Houston, because the top story in the last week, or actually it's the last 24 hours in terms of when we're recording, we saw Randy Waldrum lose his job. He's been fired by the Houston Dash after a 2-5 start to the season. Doesn't really come as a surprise, does it? Dan Laletta put some stats up on Twitter. I think they've won 19 out of 71 matches that he's been in charge. I think it's 39 defeats in 71. It's like a 55% loss record. It doesn't read well, and it's not really a surprise that he's gone, is it?
Yeah, it is. And I mean, you know, you can almost throw that first year the Dash were in the league out the window, just because they had very little time to build a roster and try and form an identity. But since 2015, look, the tools have been there for this team. I don't think that there are many excuses for a reason why that they haven't been successful. And after going to see the Dash play at Sky Blue, I mean, they just didn't look in sync. They didn't look like a team that had much of an idea what they wanted to do and what they wanted to execute outside of a couple of lucky bounces that went their way. And, you know, a lot of people pointed out, I know you pointed out on your Twitter feed, that it's disappointing because Randy is a class act. He's a really good guy and a good coach. I mean, this is a guy that almost took Trinidad and Tobago, who had, let's just say, not much in terms of, you know, any history in women's football, and took them nearly to the World Cup, barring an 88th minute goal by Ecuador in the two-legged intercontinental playoff a couple of years ago. So this guy knows how to be successful in the coaching system and in the game, but just it didn't work out. And sometimes in results business, you have to make changes in order to be successful, and this was one that Houston had to make.
Yeah, I find it difficult to disagree with you and disagree with the decision that was made. I think Randy's position has been kind of under scrutiny by probably supporters and those that follow the league for a little while. I think they have so much talent in that squad. I think, you know, when you've got a 2-5, and we saw periods last season where they were struggling to score, when you've got players like Janine Becky and Rachel Daly and Kaylee Ojai, it kind of left you scratching your head, didn't it? It was one of those where all the pieces of the puzzle were there. All of the talent was there from back to front. They've got one of the best keepers in the world in Lydia Williams. They've got a great backup in Jane Campbell, who's obviously on the cusp of the US women's national team. They've got international defenders. They've got class in midfield. One of the best midfields, I think, in the league, when you look at Mo Bryan and Andrew Senior and Amber Brooks and players like that. And the forward line is, without doubt, got goals in it. And yet, I looked at the game at the weekend against Seattle when I saw Janine Becky miss a standard 101. I think it was Kaylee Ojai missed a one-on-one. And I looked at it and I thought, last season, those two would have buried those chances. And Janine Becky in particular looks devoid of confidence at the moment. And I think a change of coach is probably the right way forward.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, again, you never ask or want to see, you know, call for a head, if you will. But yeah, no, it's time. I mean, you talk about Janine Becky. I mean, it's almost like there's a Jekyll and Hyde, where when she turns up for Canada, she's brilliant. When she turns up for the Dash, I mean, she might get five touches of the ball and look disinterested at times. And this is not to call out for anything, because we know that she's world class. If you just go back to last year at the Olympics, I mean, she made her case for being one of the best forwards in the world. And, you know, maybe she's going through a little bit of a rough patch right now in her game and her skill set. But yeah, no, I think it's time for just new ideas, a new head in charge. I know that there's going to be an interim head coach. And also, side note, I know that this was announced a little while ago. Corey Ropkin of one of the people that cover the Dash on a regular basis has announced that a opportunity has come about for Randy to stay with the organization as kind of overseeing youth setup that they have there, as the Dash are looking to set up and, you know, fulfill their development academy on the girls' side. So wanted to see if he comes about there. But yeah, just it never worked out, and they need changes. They need changes quick, because this season, a shot of a playoff position, it's slipping away really quickly.
Yeah, well, we had a chance, the media, to speak to Chris Canetti. He actually had fair play to him. You know, it was Memorial Day that they announced the departure, and Chris Canetti made himself available to media to have a chat about the decision to fire Randy. And I managed to clip some audio from the conference call, and he gave an insight into why it was that they decided to depart with Randy. So here's some audio from Chris Canetti.
Randy and I met this morning to talk about the direction of the team going forward. And you know, the result of that meeting is that we both mutually concluded that it was in the team's best interest to go a different direction as it relates to the head coach. So we made the decision this morning to relieve Randy of the coaching duties, and are going to go with Omar Morales as the head coach for the game this Saturday against Washington, while we spend the next few days evaluating our long-term plans and who Randy's replacement will be going forward. We're 2-5 on the season. We're really disappointed in that record. You know, we had higher hopes for ourselves coming into this season. We're on a 4-game losing skid. You know, we've lost a couple of games in a row at home. We go into a match this weekend, and then we come into a break. You know, we want to get things organized and set before we come back after that break for the game in mid-June, and make sure we have everything fully in place for the final 16 games of the season, and give ourselves the best chance possible to compete for a playoff spot, which was our goal coming into the season. So we felt the timing, when you line up all of those things, made sense. In particular today, because we, one, decided to meet, two, it's an off day for the team, and wanted to get everything you know, on the table and sorted early in the week so that we could have as much preparation for the game this weekend as possible.
So that was Chris Canetti giving some insight into the departure of Randy Waldrum. As JJ said earlier, genuinely one of the good guys. We're not paid to say that. We don't have to say that, but he is. We've both had the pleasure of interviewing him and meeting him, and wish him well. Hopefully he can find a role, whether it's at the Dash or somewhere else soon, because as JJ said, he is a good coach and he's a good guy. We need to stay in Houston, JJ, because other than Randy Waldrum's departure, the other main talking point came on Saturday when the Dash hosted Seattle Reign. You and I discussed it on a recent show. I think it might have even been on the last one, about the 4 o'clock kickoffs on a Saturday afternoon for Lifetime Channel. The temperature, I believe, in Houston was over 90 degrees with a humidity index of over 100 degrees. It resulted, unfortunately, at the full-time whistle in Rachel Daly collapsing and having to be taken to hospital with heat exhaustion. Not a great look for the league, drew a lot of criticism. I think some of it understandable. I guess the decision now is, what do they do to try and make sure this doesn't happen again? Because unfortunately, there are games all the way through the summer that are scheduled for the same time. Not in Houston, I believe, but they are in Orlando, and that's going to get very hot as well.
Look, in this country, it gets hot really quickly. I mean, I live in the Northeast, just about an hour and a half outside of Manhattan and New York City. We'll get 90 degrees here Fahrenheit as well in the months of July and August with humidity. So you don't have to look around anywhere because everywhere it's going to get hot in the summertime. Yeah, the 4 o'clock time window has to change quickly because you're putting a real like hardship on the players. I mean, you're looking out for their safety. They're human beings at the end of the day. And as we know in football, players run up to 10 miles per match, depending on the position. I mean, no one, you take an average person and put them out at that temperature, I wouldn't be surprised if they can only last 2 miles before they're calling for water and for fluids. Look, I mean, it's dangerous. I wouldn't want to be out there. If I had a daughter, I wouldn't want to be putting her out in that situation, having to play under those conditions. I know Rachel's mother took to social media and was extremely worried about the whole situation, though thankfully, again, there was a lot of, and we got to give a big hat tip and a shout out to all the people, the EMTs that were there that helped Rachel, you know, not to say revived, but got her back into stable condition really quickly, because as you and I know, a couple of minutes left to right, that could have gotten really bad really quickly.
And I guess the only upside of it is that there wasn't more players that went down and had to go to hospital, because, you know, you've got 22 players plus the subs that came on all having to run around in that heat. The game, if we're honest, was a little bit of a non-event. It was a good win for Seattle, but, you know, after, 15, 20 minutes of each half, you've got players who are dead on their feet because they're running around in temperatures that no one should be running around in. No one should have to run around in. And, you know, it, as much as anything, yes, it's the primary concern, and the NWSL did release a statement saying that our primary objective is to make sure that the players and the participants in the game are safe. That is primary objective number one. Somewhere on that list as well, a little bit further down, is lifetime having a product that is entertaining and is going to draw spectators. Now, we know that the diehards, we know that people like you and I are going to watch those games no matter what. But if you are watching the Dash against the Rain, I am in no way questioning the effort and the commitment of those players, but you cannot expect them to play at their full capacity. And I think Jess Fishlock said it as well, and as did Janine Van Wyk, the South African defender from Houston. You cannot play at your full capacity when you're running around in those temperatures, which means you are getting a product that is not representative of what you would normally see on a week-to-week basis.
Correct. 100% correct. I mean, you know, end of the day here, as I said before, it's already miserable having to be out in weather like that, but having to run 8-10 miles during a 90-minute span where, you know, 4 o'clock also, that's not 7 o'clock where you're going to maybe get, some shelter from the sun. The sun will be setting at that time. That's in the middle of the heat at 4 p.m. in the afternoon. There's not a whole lot of shade that's going to be helping you out. That you can't ask players to strain themselves in a situation like that, because the human body might not be able to do it. And in a case like we saw with Rachel Daly, the body might just give out after a time because you're not getting enough fluids. You're not, you know, doing, let's just put it simple, you're not doing the right thing at the right temperature. No one should be asked to run that much in that amount of heat. So I'm with you on, you know, the player safety, and obviously what the league said, and, you know, with the whole standing of that lifetime is, and that's another big thing as well, lifetime is a partner in the league, so they have a say in how a lot of these time slots go. If they want it to be 4 o'clock, then so be it, but then they might have to go and look at those, what they say, secondary sites, those backup sites for 4 p.m. and see if those are better options at playing at that time, because certainly it wasn't at Houston, and if you're saying there's going to be matches at 4 p.m. in Orlando, mate, you better hope it rains on that day, because that might be the only saving grace in all of it.
Yeah, I don't have the fixture list in front of me, but I'm pretty certain I saw someone on social say that there were a game or two scheduled over the summer in Orlando, possibly in July. I'm not too sure, but yeah, something has to change. And I don't want this to be about hammering Lifetime. We were lauding them all of a few months ago for entering into this partnership with the NWSL, having a broadcast partner, ensuring that, you know, there would be games broadcast on national television. This isn't about hammering Lifetime, but what it is about is raising an issue that has come about because a player's or a number of players' safety was put at risk, and we saw one of them end up in hospital, and we don't want that to happen again. So there are some difficult discussions that the league and Lifetime need to have, and let's hope that we don't see that happen again, because it's scary. You know, you've got Rachel Daly in a different country to her parents. They can only watch on a stream. They're not able to know what's going on until they can get in contact with someone. And, you know, it's not healthy. It's not a great look for the league. And as I said, the product that will be presented to spectators isn't going to be what you'd normally see on a week-to-week basis either. So let's hope they can come to a resolution on that one, because it's not nice to see. Before we wrap up, we spoke about a red card earlier on. You and I were discussing off recording. I want to talk about Boston Breakers defender Alicia Chapman, who got sent off in injury time in the game at the Portland Thorns. Now, she described it as a weak call. I think she described it as piss poor by the official. I actually wouldn't say it was piss poor, but I do agree with it. I don't think it was a red card, but you're of the view that it was.
Yep. I'm going to go ahead and put myself out on the limb there. Look, I could see that a half a dozen ways. For me, Kieran, I think because leaving the feet. Now, I don't know how much, if any, of the studs were showing in that challenge. But, yeah, that for me, when I looked at that one real time, the first thing I saw was red. The first thing I was like, yep, that's a red card. I've seen it given yellow. I've seen it even given as just a stern talking to. Not often, but have seen it that way. But, yeah, my first instinct was red. And that's not to say that Chappie is a reckless defender. She's a very smart defender. She knows when to get stuck in at times and when to lay back and, you know, make the safe play and help with cover. But I think that time she was a bit late, and leaving the feet was the one for me.
I can see why it was given. I can see why it was given. I'm not actually going to criticise the referee, which is why I'm saying I don't think it's piss poor. I can see why it was given. It was a challenge at speed. She's gone through the ball and then gone through the player afterwards. And that, for me, is the decisive thing. If she's gone through the player to get to the ball, then it's a definite foul and it's a red card. But I think from what I saw, and obviously I haven't seen it since, she went through the ball first and then the player. And I'm not saying that makes it right, but for me, that means it's a fairer challenge. And for that reason, I don't even think I would have booked her. Now, maybe it's because I watch English football, and obviously over here, you know, a lot of the challenges that can sometimes take place aren't necessarily going to be called. I know that some of the refereeing, actually Emma Hayes has come out this week and actually criticised quite heavily the level of refereeing in the English game. And we see some very heavy challenges that won't necessarily always get a booking. Now, I think even Carly Lloyd said in a post-match press conference or a post-match mix zone that I attended recently, she said that the game over here is quite physical. There are some maybe borderline challenges that go on, and the referees won't necessarily call them. So maybe I'm more used to seeing that, and that's why I don't think Alicia Chapman's was a red card. But that's why I wanted to discuss it, because I know that we had differing views. You've put your view across and backed it up, and I've put my view across and backed it up. I'm sure that Twitter and our listeners as well will no doubt have their differing views, whether you're a Breaker or whether you're a Thorn or whether you're a neutral of the two teams. I think it's an interesting one. But as we said at the start of the show, we're not going to go through result by result. I think we might leave it there, mate, unless I've forgotten anything. I think we've pretty much wrapped up there.
Yeah, I think we've covered everything that we wanted to.
Absolutely. Well, as I said, listeners, we will be back next week. We're going to do a spring series roundup. The spring series finishes this coming weekend. Obviously, you can always visit our website, womenssoccerzone.com. There is content going up there semi-regularly. We have a couple of new writers on board. We're going to be bringing a few more on board. So there is going to be regular stuff going up. I will be in Cardiff this week for the UEFA Women's Champions League final. So keep an eye on our social media channels. I'll be doing updates from that. And we will continue to put these podcasts together every couple of weeks. If you wish to contact us, you can do. We're on Twitter on @WosoZone. We're on email on WosoZone@gmail.com. And you can listen to us on iTunes or at womenssoccerzone.com. Until next time, take care of yourselves and bye-bye.